Hi, good afternoon. Well, this is a podcast that I have done in collaboration with Chris Thompson at CITA, the last part, and with Chris Lenerke at CI, and some other people across the US. And I will talk about the correlation between the electromagnetic and the gravitational wave spectrum in binary compact objects. And in particular, I will focus in the space detector that hopefully will be launched in this or the next decade. And also, for the sake of time, I will talk a little bit about precursors for LIGO, that is the current, one of the current ground detectors of gravitational waves. Well, as I already said, the first generation of ground detectors is already operating, that is LIGO and GIGO. The second is being built, and the third, there is even a 13 project that will be the Einstein telescope. And in each generation, the sensitivity increases by a factor of 10, so it allows us to see or to measure farther events. There is also a space detector in project that is that forms of three satellites orbiting next to the Earth and around the Sun. And there is also the possibility of using an array of pulsars as a detector. So these different detectors can measure or have a sensitivity curve in different, a bit maximized in different frequency bands. For instance, LIGO can observe in spiral and mergers of binary neutron stars and binary black holes of stellar solar masses, while LISA can observe coalescence of supermassive black holes up to 10 to the 6 solar masses. In addition, there are some systems that can emit both gravitational and electromagnetic waves, and those are the ones that we are going to study, because that will allow us to extract more information of the system. As an example, the gravitational wave astronomy can measure very precisely the luminosity distance to the source, while the electromagnetic counterpart could localize the source on the sky and could be at the spectrum. And in this talk, I will focus mainly in binary supermassive black holes surrounded by some sort of matter, and if I have time, in binary neutron stars. Well, the current observation seems to indicate that there are supermassive black holes lying in the center of most of the galaxies, with masses between 10 to the 5 to 10 to the 8 solar masses. And in the case of the active galactic nuclei, they are surrounded by a disk, an accretion disk, which is likely magnetized. The magnetic field strength near the black hole can be computed in different ways. One is through the jets that are being observed, and that gives us an estimate of 10 to the 4, 10 to the 6 now near the black hole. Or by assuming equipartition on the heating of equipartition of the magnetic field with the identical energy of the heating gas, and that gives us what is called the Eddington magnetic field that is also around 10 to the 5 gauss. We also know that the galaxies have undergone some mergers from their lifetimes, and during the merger of a galaxy, if they have an accretion disk or of some gas around, well, there are many processes that extract angular momentum of the system until that the binary black hole becomes bounded, and they follow the gas around while they are orbiting, forming a circumbinary disk. the disk will follow close to the binary orbit until that the gravitational wave dominates, or the emission of gravitational wave dominates, and then the gravitational wave extracts angular momentum from the system faster than what the disk can follow, so the orbit shrinks and forms a gap between the inner part of the disk and the binary. So the final configuration is that we will have a disk which is like at 100 or 200 Schwarzschild radii from the binary, and close to the black hole, there will be the magnetic field produced by this circumnavigation disk. So, well, this is one of the systems that will produce for sure gravitational waves coming from the binary black hole, and can produce also electromagnetic waves coming from either the interaction of the space time with the electromagnetic field, or from the space time with the disk. In order to study this system, well, we need general relativity to study the evolution of the space-time, Maxwell equation for the electromagnetic field, the hydrodynamics for the disk, and in addition, we have to consider radiation processes due to the accretion and the disk dynamics. It's complicated to consider all these processes. So we will simplify a little bit the system, focusing on just what happens before or during the merger. In particular, we will study the interaction of the space-time with the electromagnetic fields. So we will consider only a subdomain containing the two black holes, but excluding the disk. So in this domain, there are only we only have the, to consider the space-time and the electromagnetic fields. So we don't need the hydrodynamics to consider the disk, which is outside our domain. And we will neglect the radiation processes as a first approximation. So our equation that we have to solve will be the Einstein equation with a special tensor given by the electromagnetic field and the Maxwell equations on the other side that can be written in this way in a covariant form. This system of equation has to be closed with a prescription for the current, for our Ohm law. And as a first, some details, this system is so complicated that it's difficult to even get a simple model to study. So we usually solve it numerically. Due to the presence of many special scales in the problem, we have to use parallelization and adaptive mesh refinement. We also need to deal with the singularity of the black hole in some way, either with excision or with a puncture approach. We need to choose a gauge condition that leads to a well-formed system. And after all that, what we consider numerically is, as I said before, a domain that is close to the black holes, and so only contains the black hole and the electromagnetic fields around. We set an initial data given by the space-time plus a magnetic field along the set direction, like the one that would be produced by a disk in flat space-time, and with electric field equal to zero initially. And we evolve the system of equations, the Einstein Maxwell, until that it reaches a stationary state. So for instance, this is for the final solution for a non-spinning black hole, and this is for a spinning black hole. We can also, as a test, fix the space-time, for instance, to be in Kerr-Schild coordinates. And I am plotting here only the electric field in the y equals zero plane. And on the left is the numerical solution, here the apparent direction of the black hole, and in pink is the ergo here. And on the right, I am plotting the same electric field, but for the exact solution, which was found by Wolf in 70, for a black hole immersed in an external magnetic field which is aligned with the spin. And in that case, we show that the solution can be written, well, the solution for the Maxwell tensor can be written in terms of the two filling vectors of the of Kerr's time. Notice that this configuration of electric fields can be understood also from the point of view of the membrane paradigm, which endows some charge density to the apparent horizon. So if we have a conductor rotating in the external magnetic field, that the charges at the surface will notice the Lorentz force and will readjust until that the force vanishes in the interior. And actually they will readjust in this way, such that the electric field outside is exactly like the one that is produced by this charge configuration. Well, that was the test. This is what we wanted to study, the binary coalescence and merger of two black holes with magnetic fields. The magnetic fields are in blue and the electric fields are in red. And well, the electric and magnetic fields are Gibbs dependent, so it's difficult to extract information from here. So what we do is to compute the Newman-Penrose scalars that are more invariant, that give us an invariant measurement of the radiation. We have the Psi 4 for the gravitational radiation, which is just the Riemann tensor, or actually the Weyl tensor contracted with a tetra, with a null tetra. And the Phi 2 to describe the electromagnetic radiation, that is the Maxwell tensor contracted with the same tetra. I'm plotting for here there are a series of snapshots of the binary merger. In yellow and red, I'm plotting the electromagnetic the gravitational radiation, and in blue and green, the gravitational one, the electromagnetic one, sorry. And as you can see here, well, there is both kinds of radiation until the merger, and after the merger, there is no radiation. When we perform the decomposition in the spherical harmonics of this radiation, we noted that the electromagnetic radiation also has a quadrupolar nature, as it has the gravitational waves. In addition, the modes have the same frequency and the same, and the radiated energy have the same shape. So, in some way, the electromagnetic radiation is mimicking the gravitational wave one. And this can be explained again using the membrane paradigm model. So if we have two spheres which are rotating with some velocity in an external magnetic field, they will feel again some, well, the charges at the surface will not be some Lorentz force, they will readjust until the force in the interior vanishes and leads to this configuration, that is electric quadrupole. Now, electric quadrupole in the correlation frame, you can compute what will be the electric field and the magnetic field far away, and basically they have this kind of dependence, that is, at least in time, is the same as the gravitational waves. And this means that most of the
These are equal mass black holes?
Yes, this is equal mass. When you have an equal mass or a spinning black holes, well, the model will be a bit more complicated.
You expect a dipole.
Yes, in principle, yes. So in this case, most of the radiation is emitted on the plane, can be dependent, but the maximum is on the plane of the binary and on the direction of the velocity. Well, this is very nice, and the result is very simple, but what happens is that the Kerr black hole, when there are magnetic fields, is unstable to pre-production. So outside the black hole, there will be no electrovacuum that we see anymore, but there will be some charges and some currents. And this is because the Weyl solution have a electric field along the magnetic field line that is non-zero. So any spherical particle will be accelerated electrically toward the black hole. It will reach high velocities until that it will emit some photon, that will decay to a pair positron and electron, and this will start another that will be again be accelerated. This will start a cascade process until that there are enough charges to screen the electric field. So all the magnetosphere of the black hole will be filled with a tenuous plasma, magnetically dominated, which will be surrounding the black hole. So in this case, the initial assumption that the currents and the charges are zero is not valid anymore. We need some other more complicated Ohm law. And one way of getting one is from the assumption that the plasma is half a low density and is magnetically dominated. So what we have conservation of the total efficiency tensor that can be decomposed into the one of the fluid, the one of the electromagnetic field. The one of the electromagnetic field using Maxwell equation is equal to the Lorentz force. And if the magnetic field is much larger than the density and the pressure, this means that this term is going to be much, much larger than this one. So in order to fill this this equality, this term has to be zero almost by itself. This means that the Lorentz force has to branch. This is why this approximation is called for free. And in the 2+1, it means basically this condition, which gives us a prediction that for the current. So in this way, the plasma supplies charges and currents, but the quantities of density, pressure, and velocity doesn't appear explicitly on the equation. So we can still solve only the ancient Maxwell system with a current prescribed by the for-free condition. Using these conditions of for-free and assuming stationarity and axial symmetry, we can compute what is the electromagnetic energy flux around a black hole, a single spinning black hole, and we get this expression that can be evaluated at the apparent horizon to get this final equation, where omega f is a ratio between components of the Maxwell tensor, and it can be interpreted as the rotation frequency of the magnetic field lines, and omega h is this quantity that is can be interpreted again as the rotation frequency of the black hole. So we have that if there is some radial component of the magnetic field at the apparent horizon, and the rotation of the magnetic field lines is smaller than the rotation of the black hole, there will be some net extraction of energy from the black hole through the magnetic field lines. This is an analytical result. Well, before going to the numerical comparison with the black hole magnetic effect, one could argue if the solution is going to be very different by considering that we are in vacuum or we are in or we have some current that leads to the for-free approximation. So I'm putting here the magnetic field in the y equals zero plane again for the electro vacuum and the for-free approximation on each side. And well, for the magnetic field, you can see that there is a radial component near the apparent horizon, but the most dramatic change is for the electric field. So this in this plot. In this case, the electric field is very different due to the presence of currents in this magnetosphere. Well, in the same simulation, you can plot. I am putting here for a hair black hole the magnetic field lines in blue and the energy flux density, the electromagnetic energy flux density in yellow. And what you can see is that the magnetic field lines threading the apparent horizon are forced to rotate. This is determined before by the rotational rate of the magnetic field lines. And there is a net extraction of energy, the electromagnetic energy, through these magnetic field lines. And since our code is completely general, we can consider also cases where the spin of the black hole is misaligned with respect to the direction of the magnetic field. In this case, there is a 90 degrees misalignment, and we still get some extraction of energy through the magnetic field lines.
Sorry, that last picture. So, in the first one, this last one, which direction is the spin of the black hole?
So
the first one's
spin. In this
spin
case,
is
up,
uh-huh.
And in this case, is
out. So if that's out, why does it not look symmetrical, rotationally symmetric around the spin vectors coming out? Did the weird feature at the bottom there. What causes that kind of kink? Oh, so in which way is the spin vector?
Okay.
That's this way. Okay,
yeah,
not coming out this
one.
Okay.
Well, so we can measure numerically what is the total radiative power as a function of the spin, which are the points in this plot. And making a fit, we recover the nice result from McKinney from last year. Basically, that the spin, that the luminosity depends on B squared and the rotation of the black hole squared. We can also see what is the dependence of the luminosity with respect to the misalignment angle. And we get something new, that is this dependent 1 plus cosine of the square of theta, that is exactly the opposite of what has been found in the case of pulsars.
So, just make sure. So, this is still, you're doing a vertical field here?
Yeah.
When it's non-spinning? Okay. I'm just surprised you get the same result as the BZ mechanism for the monopole solution, but you're doing vertical fields, so
yes.
It's kind of interesting.
We didn't try with the monopole, only for fixing at the beginning, not for this result.
Was McKinney doing the monopole?
Maybe, yes.
So, one question. So, how would this luminosity compare to Eddington luminosity?
I'm not sure.
Well, it'll depend on what you put in for the magnetic field.
Yeah. So in some of the rounds we've chosen some values as sub-Eddington, but you're free to choose the magnetic field as you want. And of course, we choose it below, so it's not a blow things apart.
But that's what
that's an ambiguity that is there.
Could it be bigger than Eddington? I mean, you would think something might go wrong if it's bigger than Eddington, but I'm not sure what. Maybe it's like.
But in order to be bigger than Eddington, you would have to put much more strain in the magnetic field, which in itself would cause that.
No, it's in more than Eddington for sure, because we are choosing the magnetic field to be in equipartition with the Eddington accretion. And this is a fraction of the
of
that electric.
So you're assuming it's equipartition with Eddington accretion. So this would be a small fraction of that?
It would be a fraction. I don't know if a small
what fraction.
That depends on the spin of the black hole also. But it would be a fraction, not larger.
It's like 10 to the minus 10 or a percent?
I would say a percent. Well, you can also consider boosted black holes. See that the luminosity depends at the velocity of the black hole to the square, and this could look like a new result. But we found that in the 60s, actually. There were people in the Edgerton how to propose satellites in the ionosphere. And, well, actually they were considering a charged sphere with some velocity in an external magnetic field, which is, well, if we use the membrane paradigm, very close to our problem, and they found the same kind of dependence of the luminosity. So if we believe the membrane paradigm, we could make a direct comparison of these two values.
What velocity are you talking about?
The velocity of the black hole. We boost the black hole.
You boost the black hole.
With respect to the external magnetic field. So there is relative velocity. Well, the case that we put two black holes that are going to have a head-on collision. And what you can see here is the magnetic field lines are being bent. Behind the black holes. When the curvature of these lines is high enough, or higher than the pull of the black hole, they will come back to the original position, and that perturbation will propagate upwards as an arc wave. This is what we see here, where there are two fluxes of electromagnetic energy fluxes which extract kinetic energy from the black hole. If we consider a binary, we get basically the same effect, but now the fluxes are being twisted as the black hole orbit around and until they merge. So if we, for instance, look at the snapshot of the merger, it's interesting to see that we can take a look on the history of the binary just looking at the electromagnetic energy that was being extracted at each time. After the merger, well, we recovered the black hole object mechanism where there is just a flux coming from a spinning black hole. As we said before, the electromagnetic power depends like V squared and the velocity squared, that is just omega r squared, while the gravitational wave power goes like r to the fourth and omega to the sixth. This means that while the gravitational wave energy is emitted mainly during the last day of the, before the merger, in the case of a binary black hole of 10 to the 8 solar masses, the electromagnetic energy is created within days or even weeks before the merger. Well, I will talk now about the electromagnetic precursors for LIGO that basically are binary neutron stars and binary neutron stars black hole. In principle, and the advanced LIGO will be able to detect at least 10 binary neutron star mergers or one black hole neutron star merger per year. And neutron stars are compact objects of 10 kilometers radius with a 1.5 or 2 solar masses, which contains magnetic fields which can go from 10 to 8 to 10 to the 12 hours. And the merger of neutron stars or black hole neutron stars will produce a black hole surrounded by a massive accretion disk, which is the scenario expected to produce short gamma ray bursts. But we also have the pulsars that are just rotating neutron stars, highly magnetized, which emit some beam of electromagnetic radiation. And this emission is produced at the magnetosphere, which again can be described or have to be described with the porphyry approximation. So it was solved for the first time in 2006 by Anatoly Tsiolkovsky. This is the configuration of the magnetic field lines that looks like a dipole up to the light cylinder, and then the magnetic field lines open and they will close at infinity. And he found that the luminosity of the pulsar has been dependent or depends like the magnetic dipole to the magnetic moment to the square, the rotation to the fourth, and this depends on the misalignment angle between the magnetic moment and the rotation of the star. Well, let's consider first a binary neutron star, which are magnetized and for circular orbits. And each neutron star magnetosphere have to be described or can be described by the Porphyry approximation again. So this is the general picture where after the merger of the two neutron stars, we expect to find a pulsar that will probably collapse very fast to a similar to a Kerr black hole. So the interaction of the magnetospheres in this case will probably change the topology of the magnetic field lines by allowing or because of reconnections, and will produce current sheets and dissipation regions that can lead to emission emission effect. In this case, we cannot use only the force-free approximation because we have to describe also the fluid and the electromagnetic fields inside the star. And in that region, the fluid is well described by the MHD equations, which is a good description for the interior of the star, the special tensor fastness form, where the raw density, excellent internal energy, velocity, is pressure. The total one also contains the part of the electromagnetic fields. And what? In addition, we have equations of MHC that is the divergence of these that provide equations for this quantity. Our idea is to use a hybrid method or hybrid approach to describe the interior of the neutron star with this equation, with the MHC fluid equations, and then make a match of the equations to the four free equations at the surface of the star. Then describe the exterior of the star with four free. This has to be done basically because the MHC equations doesn't work well in regions with high magnetization, where the magnetic field is much higher than the density or the pressure of the fluid. As a test, we tried with a rotating magnetized neutron star to try to reproduce the pulsar solution of Spekovsky. Here we show in the y equals zero plane the magnetic fields that they look like a dipole up to the light cylinder, and then they open up in a similar way to this picture. It seems that it works, and when we try with binaries, we have still to check and validate the results. But these two points in yellow are the neutron stars. In blue, I am plotting the magnetic field lines, and in green, the currents. And what you can see that there is a formation of closed loops, which envelops the two neutron stars, and they seem to correlate with the binary. So in this configuration, the magnetic moments are up for each star. And if we consider that they are up-down, now the magnetic field lines also form loops, but they don't correlate, but are being ejected trivially from the system. So this is an interesting and strange behavior. That again have to be validated and checked. This is a summary. We have studied different electromagnetic counterparts, in particular the precursors, whatever is going to be emitted or radiated before or at the merger. Both for LIGO, that is, actually, this is the opposite. For LIGO would be the binary neutron star, and for LISA, the supermassive binary black holes. In both cases, the force-free regime is a good approximation to describe the magnetospheres of black holes and neutron stars. And in the case of the binary black holes, the magnetic field is external, is produced by the circumbinary disk, which can extract energy both from the rotational and kinetic energy of the black hole. While in the case of the binary neutron star, the magnetic field is internal, is produced by the star, so the behavior is quite different. And we expect that the interaction of the magnetospheres will change the topology of the fields. And that, again, will produce some sort of observable emission. And that's all. Thank you.
Should we look for these electromagnetic counterparts?
principle, well, it depends on the radiation processes. It should be in X-rays or gamma rays, depending on the process.
But I mean, this electromagnetic radiation that you were calculating in this binary black hole.
It's not direct. You will not observe that radiation directly.
Ah.
That will be transferred to particles that will be accelerated, and those will produce radiation that will be observed. But the direct one is in a frequency too low to be observed.
Any chance that we've already seen?
Maybe. But we have to ask in the chat or maybe someone to make observations.
Well, you were asking any chance we're raising the gamma wave front or the
No, the electromagnetic signature. I mean, is this how you need? I guess what I'm asking is how unique is this electromagnetic signature? Is it the smoking gun that, oh my goodness, that must have been a merger, or is it something that, oh, if we get the gravity waves, then we can look for it?
To see the merger, you're going to have to be, I mean, lucky to be watching it at the right spot at the right time. But what we're seeing here, so we see AGNs, right? The AGNs are all over the place. Well, maybe there are some galaxies where you're seeing two AGNs. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there are already some images out there that have these X-shaped jets that have been interpreted as a kick or as a merger that took place and flipped the spin. Well, and you could have another interpretation of saying, okay, you have these two guys very close to each other and you're actually seeing two AGNs, but you're confused and you think it's only one. Of course, I'm going out on a limb because we're definitely biased here, but I don't know.
Any other questions? Okay, so thank you for us again.